supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The U.S. Senate approved a budget blueprint last night that will likely pave the way for a $1.5 trillion tax overhaul. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Lawmakers representing our region in Washington are engaged in a fierce debate over tax reform. WHYY's Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports on how that may help or hurt you.
Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey is at the center of negotiations on tax reform. He sits on the Finance Committee, which is ground zero for the debate in the upper chamber, which is why President Trump invited Toomey and a bipartisan group of senators to the White House this week. On the Senate floor, Toomey explained why he sees tax reform as vital.
Why is it important? Well, the main reason it's so important is because for so long, our entire country has been laboring with such feeble economic growth.
Toomey wants the plan to reduce tax rates while also increasing the standard amount average Americans can deduct each year, while also providing a larger tax credit to families with children.
It absolutely has to provide tax relief for hardworking Americans, middle income, lower income, people of modest means, who many of whom live paycheck to paycheck. There has to be a direct tax benefit for those Pennsylvanians.
The White House wants to slash the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. Which it says will in turn mean more money in the pockets of average Americans. They also want to end the estate tax on families passing on assets worth more than $5 million. Democrats, like Philadelphia Congressman Brendan Boyle, say the GOP plan is a non-starter.
So it's terrible in two respects. Number one, it gives almost all of the benefit, 80% of the benefit, to the richest 1%. And number two, it raises taxes on many middle-class and working families to pay for it.
The Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center analyzed the plan and says the wealthiest 1% of Americans make out the best from it, while 28% of middle-class workers would actually see a tax increase. Boyle says that's unacceptable.
If you live in Northeast Philadelphia or suburban Philadelphia, given what you pay in state taxes, what you may pay in Philly wage tax, what you pay in property tax, it is likely, and if you have kids because of the personal exemptions, it is very likely you will see your taxes go up under the Republican plan, not down.
Many House Republicans from our region still aren't on board with their chamber's version of the plan because it would end the ability to deduct your state and local taxes. That would hit New Jersey and Pennsylvania especially hard. It's something Senator Toomey didn't address during the debate on the floor. In the past, he's contended most people will still end up saving on taxes because of other changes that are included in the overhaul. It's worth an estimated $96 billion. National Republican leaders may favor ending the deduction, but Congressman Leonard Lance from central New Jersey is trying to get that provision stripped out.
New Jersey is one of those states that would be hardest hit, perhaps the state hardest hit, if this were to be eliminated. And this was on the table in 1985 and 1986, but it was eventually taken off the table. And it's, in effect, a form of double taxation.
Lance says he doesn't like that party leaders are once again singling out states like New Jersey to pay for tax cuts elsewhere.
New Jersey subsidizes other states in so many ways. And if you look at the entire framework, we are a state that sends a great deal more revenue to Washington than we receive back.
Home builder associations also oppose that provision because they worry it will hurt business if people can't deduct their property taxes from their federal returns. South Jersey Republican Congressman Tom MacArthur says he's still undecided on the proposal, but he's lobbying hard to get those provisions stripped out.
Well, I'm not drawing lines in the sand. I'm going to fight this out and hopefully have success in getting this restored. Homeownership is good for American communities. The federal government has every reason to try to support this, and to eliminate property tax, as an example, is just going to diminish homeownership.
Republican leaders say eliminating some deductions while increasing the standard deduction will make filing your taxes simpler. MacArthur says he supports that, but he's focused on his broader goal.
I'm all for simplification, but that's not the end goal to me. The end goal should be lower taxes for the American people and fairness.
The effort to overhaul the nation's tax code is testing the GOP's ability to govern. And right now, the region's lawmakers are highlighting the difficulty facing party leaders. While Republicans are united in wanting to cut taxes, regional disputes over which deductions to keep and which to end are making it challenging to string together all the votes needed in Congress. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Private citizens are free to block access to their Facebook posts. It's not clear whether public officials enjoy the same prerogative. Let's consider the nexus of politics and the First Amendment with Temple University law professor David Carries. Professor, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks. I'm glad to be on.
Professor, the American Civil Liberties Union is looking into the social media activities of Pittsburgh Councilwoman Darlene Harris, specifically for blocking some of her critics on Facebook. What are the criteria by which that could be considered a First Amendment violation?
Well, it depends, I think, on two main things. One is, in order to be limited by the First Amendment, she'd have to be conducting some kind of government business or government activity. If it's just a Facebook where they share pictures of grandchildren or private, personal things, she could block whoever she wants. But if she conducts some government business, like gets feedback on a proposal or something like that, and I don't know whether she has or not, but if she uses it that way, it starts looking like government action, and that would limit her in terms of the First Amendment, both free speech and the right to petition. It's another right that's in the First Amendment. We don't hear much about it, but it basically embodies your right to express yourselves to public officials. And if they open up an avenue for expression to her and close off certain people, that could be a violation of the right to petition as well as free speech. The other thing is it a public forum? Even if it's government action, it has to be a public forum. In other words, if it's something where just her staff uses that Facebook account, she and her staff, say, for internal communications and planning and communications on a daily basis, but don't open it up to the public, then it might not be a public forum. If it's kind of open to everybody but the people who she's blocked, that looks unfavorable for her side.
Well, then, do the following specifics offer clarity? She says her page is strictly for personal use. Though she describes herself as a Pittsburgh City Councilwoman, she lists her city email address and website in her biography, and she also interacts with constituents regularly.
Well, that might be one or the other, but that's starting to look like more of a government function, particularly interacting with constituents. So if that's a way that constituents... she's opened up that constituents can reach her about policy and measures pending, whatever, different proposals, then she can't be keeping off particular people because she doesn't like what they say.
Is this a relatively new area of law, this intersection of politics and social media?
Social media, definitely, because social media is new, but issues of politics and money and politics and free speech go back some time, but this is definitely a new application.
Professor, the American Civil Liberties Union is planning to send a letter to Harris. Is that a first in a potential series of steps?
Yeah, that's what attorneys usually do, particularly in an area that's unresolved. You ask them to comply with what you think the law is, and then if they refuse, you're ready to bring a suit.
Temple University law professor David Carries on NewsWorks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the University of Delaware's Lerner College of Business and Economics invites the region's professionals to attend a graduate business program's information session on Thursday, October 26th at 5:30 p.m. You can learn more about their flexible online and on-campus options, new MBA majors in fields such as healthcare management and data analytics, plus a variety of specialized graduate degrees. Details at lerner.udel.edu/info. Lerner means business. Opportunity, Inc.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Although you might not have a sense of it in Philadelphia, where the 5-1 Eagles are preparing to host Washington in Monday Night Football, overall support for the NFL is down. Let's Talk Sports with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
And Frank, I understand these new Gallup findings were presented to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, who had the opportunity to substantiate them.
That indeed is the case. Commissioner Goodell had a press conference in New York after the owners' meeting earlier this week. A reporter asked him about the Gallup numbers. They show that there has been a significant decrease in the percent of Americans who say they are fans of professional football. And by the way, those who are fans of other sports, like professional basketball or baseball, are not down. So it's kind of football in isolation that is down. And the reporter asked him about the finding in our Gallup survey that shows that support for being a fan of professional football is down most among Republicans and not among Democrats, which leads to the hypothesis that it relates to all the controversy about the national anthem.
How would you dig deeper to determine whether that hypothesis might ring true?
Well, it's hard to know exactly because there are actually a lot of things swirling around professional football now, of course. Injuries, the concussions, things along those lines, in addition to this issue about whether or not players should stand during the playing of the national anthem. But we just have the facts. That is that support is down among Republicans and it is not down among Democrats. So that's a reasonable hypothesis, but we certainly can't prove it beyond a doubt.
Injuries and concussions are common to other sports as well, particularly college football. Are those ratings down?
They are not. Actually, college football is up a couple of points in the percent of Americans who say they are fans of college football. When we last asked about these sports, which was in 2012, professional football outweighed college football by about 13 points in terms of its fandom. Now, at this point, the two are tied. So even though certainly college football is subject to some of the same kinds of issues when it comes to injuries and what have you, it has certainly not suffered a diminution in support by the average American.
Frank, we often take a look at President Trump's approval rating, which doesn't seem to waver very much. Is there any gray area?
There is, to get at that, Dave, because presidential job approval is a binary measure. We force people to say you either approve or disapprove. And the reason we do that is it goes back to the vote. When you go into the voting booth and vote for president, you have to kind of sum up everything you know about the candidates and say yes or no for the candidate. So that's why Dr. Gallup started asking approval as a binary measure a long time ago. But we followed up recently and said, even if you approve, are there some things that you don't support that Trump does? And if you disapprove, we say, are there some things that Trump does that you do support? And we do find gray area in there. Now, I have to say that those who disapprove are more monolithic in saying there's 0% that President Trump does that they support. In fact, only about a quarter of those who disapprove are willing to say that they support even 10% or more of what he does. There's some more fluidity on the other side. Those who approve of President Trump overall, when we force them to make a choice, we have a considerably higher percent who say, well, I don't support everything he does. Now, most of them support 50 or 60% or more, but there are a lot of people, particularly moderate and liberal Republicans, who will say they approve, but when we press them, say, I don't support everything that the president does.
In turn, are Republicans typically more monolithic when a Democrat is in office?
That's an excellent question. And when we wrote this up, we had to say that we have not asked this question before. This was a brainstroke we had more recently to say, let's ask this question. But we have not asked it about Obama. We didn't ask it about Clinton or George W. Bush. So we don't know whether or not these are typical or if we'd see kind of a flip in what I was just talking about had we asked about a Democratic president like Obama or Clinton.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader, with help from our intern, Isabel Cristo. At the helm this week, Bob Alls and Diana Martinez. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. John Mussoni is Assistant Vice President for News Operations. Our News Director is Eugene Son. Our Assistant News Director is Katie Culinary. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller. Newsworks Tonight.